are listening to Let's Go, the weekly anime podcast about weekly anime from Dynamite in the Brain and Secret of the Sailor Madness. So come along and hang with the Let's Go gang. Dwayne.
Hello.
Niall.
Hello, hello, hello.
And me, Brian. This week's episode, anime for the week, the 12th of June through to the 18th of June, plus the stuff I forgot last week and some other stuff which occurred even earlier than that.
It was a big list. I'm still not sure I got everything on it.
Well, luckily for me, one of the things didn't actually air, so. But not lucky for you, because you two don't watch it anyway, so.
Oh, okay.
But maybe lucky for the audience. let's start with Laughing Salesman Episode 10B, the thing we didn't watch talk about last week. Fake Grandchild.
There's a bit in the opening. I had to rewatch that opening bit of it because I was like, wait a minute. There's a fucking very long story going on here.
Because
initially I was like, geez, this is really rough. Like, he's just a lonely old man. And then I was like, wait a minute. Why was he divorcing? You know, that kind of shit. I need to know what's going on there.
Oh, hang on. His wife hands him the divorce papers on the same day he retires from his job. That's pretty rough.
Well, if you're going to be home all day, I'm fucking out. It's mean, is what I'm saying.
Trade you in, old man.
Yeah, so what we have here is a lonely old man for Moguru to prey upon.
Yep. He's also praying. He's hanging around the children's playground for, I assume, bad reasons.
For old Ben, as we see by the end of the episode.
Pretty much, yeah. That seems to be one of his many trades.
He's got a scam preying on elderly men in order to sign up to this phone service where
it's kind of a phone scam, yeah.
You'll get pretend emails from your pretend grandchild, or text messages from your pretend grandchild.
So it's almost like you actually have a grandchild in your life.
Yes.
This is so sad, and I'm guessing this is something that is close to something existing.
And then because you're old, you'll be forced to upgrade and buy a smartphone.
Yeah, I felt like the old man. I'll give him that. Like, I had to change my SIM card the other day. Apparently it was 14 years old, and that's why I wasn't getting texts anymore.
Ah, that'll happen.
I just kept changing phones. I didn't know. Ah, well.
Yes, and so the payoff is that it turns out, well, first of all, the thing he's not allowed to do is go and see the grandchild in person.
Yeah, you can only text and phone calls and shit. Even if just text.
Even if they're begging you for help.
Yeah. Oh, he's got the hospital. Oh, it's like, oh, fuck, okay. Like, actually, like, because you see him, like, initially he's like, this is fucking bullshit. And he's like, oh, I'll give it a go. It's like, this is actually genuinely nice. And then he's getting invested, and then you got the hooks in him.
Yeah, and he's like training his own life to try and keep up with this fake one he's also leading. So he has to get a new job.
Yeah.
Yeah. As you get a new job, he has to like learn to cook properly because he can't be showing them, we're having curry for dinner. What are you having, Grandpa? Not a pot noodle. I'm having curry as well. Yeah. There we go.
Yeah, I mean, like, technically his life is slightly improving by doing this, but obviously, you know, he's going to be fucked over in the end, like.
Yeah, so after he gets donned when Moguru catches him at the baseball game with a present for the kid, when he finally goes round to the kid's house, his kid greets him as Grandpa, but then he's told to join the queue, and we see a queue of other grandpas all with similar gifts.
I think they all had baseball gloves, wasn't it?
Some of them had baseball bats, but yeah. Bats. I think it was all baseball stuff, yeah.
Caps and things.
Yeah, because obviously that's what's been happening in the kid's life. He's taking up baseball.
Yeah.
So just a profound lesson the old man learns is this is what this scam is like. Don't fall for it. you've done literally nothing wrong, but now you're going to suffer for it.
I wonder about the Moguru, like, fucking punishing these people. And I was like, did he do something wrong to get divorced by his wife on the day of his retirement? You know what I mean? There's another story there, I feel. Moguru was playing a really long game on this. I don't know.
He usually doesn't pick on people who deserve it. It's just people.
I know, but he's picking on a man at his lowest point. Giving him a bit of hope and then going, ha-ha.
Take that, old man. Show that guy.
Generally, he puts them at their lowest point. He doesn't like pick them up at their lowest point in order to drop them again. That's new.
Then in episode 11, Destructive Tendencies / I'm an Idol. And Destructive Tendencies has a great opening where Muguru has to rush to interfere in the life of a man who might destroy his own life without his help.
That's my racket. If I'm not getting paid for it, then no one gets it. Well, actually, no, he doesn't get paid for it at all. So basically,
if Muguru left this guy alone, he would have ruined his own life.
Yes.
So he wouldn't have got it. Like you say, he wouldn't have got his commission.
But he's got to ruin it like the right way. Also, if he ruins his own life by himself, then he won't get the saver, the despair, which I assume is what satiates him instead of money.
That's fair. Again, you could have just left shit alone, Muguru, and this guy would have already ruined his shit. But you just had to give him the push, the temptation. Like his whole thing in this is like, I'll give you a taste of everything going to shit, and therefore you won't want to do it. But the guy's like, I need it. I want it.
Yeah.
Well, walk on the wild side.
So, yeah, basically, he seems to have this bar set up where it feels like a sleazy, dangerous bar where you might get your throat cut, but it's perfectly safe. Don't worry.
Yeah, he said
yes.
He said this alley used to be full of really rough people, but then it's cleaned up since. And I was like, I don't know, dude, it still looks pretty bad.
No, I think it's because of the economic downturn, there's no actually call for anybody to bother hanging around because there's no money, because no one's coming around getting prostitutes or drugs anymore because they can't afford them. So
yeah, the scummy people from those times still run their businesses there.
Mm.
Yeah.
He goes there, he feels satisfied, but of course there's the thing, you can never go again. But then after the sun goes in and it starts raining, he has the urge to go back.
Yeah, because this guy, as the title says, has destructive tendencies.
Yes. And so Muguru says, well, you want to go to rock bottom, do you? Be my guest.
It wasn't even that bad in the end.
No, it wasn't.
He drank a little bit too much at the bar, and then he wasn't home in time for dinner.
He missed a day of work at the bar, and Muguru like walks the wife down to the thing. He's like, why are you taking me down this valley, stranger? And he's like, no, don't worry, follow me. As everyone always just listens to him for some reason.
It's like Muguru's going, look at him. What a loser, huh?
And I liked the terse one behind the bar, and the dude who looks really rough and has his arm in a bandage for presumably entirely innocent reasons is like looking at the wife. Are you his wife? Could you fucking take him home?
Like he's
like one day out of work, and he's like, yeah, he completely looks desiccated. Oh dear.
And so that was two stories in a row where it was no supernatural things were required to ruin somebody's life, but then it goes whole hog into the supernatural in the next one.
Like, it isn't even given a scientific explanation. It's like, oh, this is a magic pendant by NASA. It's like, no, it's a magic pendant. Don't worry about it. Don't question it.
So, yeah, this one's about a stage mum who's the one being picked on, and thanks to the people in the comments on Crunchyroll, the mum is played by Kikuku Inoue, and the daughter is played by her daughter, Hanoka Inoue.
Really?
Yes.
Hmm.
This one's got really weird towards the end then.
Oh dear.
So, the mum wanted to be an idol, so she's forcing her daughter to live her dreams through her. Her daughter
just wants to be a regular teen.
Exactly, yes. Mm. So Muguru gives her this ring and a pendant. So whoever's wearing the pendant can be controlled by the person wearing the ring. But once it's shining, once the ring starts shining, that's the time limit over. You've got to take the ring off then.
Like, it never specified as, like, is there only 4 hours built into this thing or, you know.
No.
Because obviously if you explained it, you'd be able to time the shit, but yeah.
But yes, but even if you time the shit, Muguru goes and pulls the plug on the electricity in the audition room to make it overrun.
You know that's him. Yeah, that's definitely what he did. Like, I better make sure this runs over time.
Yeah. because that was well done, because they didn't show him doing it, but
he's in the audience,
yes,
after.
It panned, and it was like, oh, there he is, giggling away.
Dear.
And so, yeah, so she's quit the band, but there's an audition coming up, so she says she controls her daughter to make her go and do the audition. All she's got to do is get through the audition in time before it starts glowing. But yeah, there's this power cut, and so she's like, oh, I'm not going to take the ring off them. This must happen. But then her daughter sort of leaps off the stage, pirouetting out into the street, into the traffic.
Yeah, I was thinking it was a, what was that, dancing shoes? You know that old fucking, that fairy tale one. You put on the shoes and you can't stop dancing until your feet bleed and shit.
Oh, exactly.
I thought it was one of those.
Oh,
situations.
Yeah, I know. I wish I'd known that when I was talking about that Boo Boo and Boo Babina thing, because I bet that was a reference to that as well.
All right. Yeah.
yeah, pirouetting in the middle of traffic. I figured Moira was going to let the child die for once.
Nah, he wouldn't have that far.
No. I don't know, dude. He's a pretty sick individual. dear.
Yeah, so she begs Moguru not to let her daughter die, and so he does a massive don hitting three people all at once.
Yeah, looking for a special beam
the
band cannon.
Driver as well, yeah, yeah. Probably.
And then we cut back to the auditions, and now it's the mum auditioning.
And this is weird, and not at all fucking, like, much more preferable to a little girl going like, hey guys, I'm 14, and everyone's just enamored with her.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. Like, I was like, this is a preferable version for me. I'll be honest with you.
And then Morgan was like, oh, if you want to, like, fulfill your dream, it's best to do it yourself. Maybe she'll get on okay. Maybe her dream will come true. And it's like, maybe she will, Moguro. Maybe you stop being such a fun, sarcastic shit and fucking believe in her. Maybe it's not too late to achieve fame and stardom.
It might have been fine if she wasn't cursed by the demon that is Moguro, yeah.
Anyway, he's got things to plan for next week, where apparently he's going to deal with the king of the chat rooms.
Oh.
Dear. What a jerk.
Yep. Yeah, I after the fake grandchild and district attendances, I was like, oh, I really prefer the ones where it could be feasibly done with enough theatrics. But then I was like, oh, I kind of quite liked the supernatural stuff in the second one as well.
So. It was so crazy.
It was, yes.
Yeah, it didn't go slightly with it, just magic pendant. Yeah.
I think maybe it's funnier when it's feasible, if ridiculous, like in the very first episode when the people would come in through the window on the cherry picker each morning.
There was a system in place.
Yes.
Or he has a woman living in a closet of the apartment. That kind
yes,
of thing.
When he's employing other people to help him out in his craziness.
Well, I guess there's only so much magic to go around, yeah.
Yeah, either that or they're fulfilling other wishes that they've got. Because it was like,
but they're going to get screwed over later, you think?
Yeah, because I was thinking in The Fake Grandchild, is there's like a mom who misses her dad or something and doesn't have a dad to show these fathers photos to, and now she's made some mistake, and now all of a sudden she's got too many fathers showing up to
How do you like that? Okay. Yeah, that's a good way to look at it, I think.
That'd be a special like OVA episode that comes to the DVD homestead.
Yeah, shows how all of these things are connected somehow.
Because we saw in the Taxi Driver one, he does like don other people's lives just as incidentals to the episode one. Yeah.
Right up next up, the thing I totally ran straight past last week: Shonen Ashibe Go Go Gamma Chat episode 40, Mars Secret, in which Mum finds a secret stash of money she'd forgotten about, or rather, Gamma Chan finds the money she'd forgotten about, and Ashibe rips his shorts. And somehow those two stories come together by the end.
Yeah. So it's just mum going on a shopping trip.
Yeah, her big secret is that she enjoys, she's got a life outside of these two nitwits that she has to take care of. That's about entire stuff. And she does that. But she has to, but you can't let the boys know, otherwise they'll be wondering why.
I don't think they'd be mad at you, dude.
I know, but she seemed to be acting that way. She was going to keep all this like under wraps because they'd be asking where to get that money from. Why didn't you spend it on us getting us like sweets and things?
But she did spend it on them.
My money.
That's the thing. Like, she went like, oh, yeah, you could have some of the stuff.
Yeah, I'm not sure that's necessary. Maybe they... Maybe the husband would be like, oh, well, if you wanted all these things, you could have just asked me because I'm super rich. And maybe secretly super rich. The granddad could buy anything for them if they wanted. Yeah. So, yeah.
You would just buy the pants company and just make pants if you wanted.
Maybe that's why she has to do it on the sly. Yeah, yes,
doesn't want any of that nonsense from the grandfather because they get enough of that anyway.
a baby seal on the house, so
yes, and it ends up with the dad wearing a blouse that she'd bought and Ishibe wearing the Daisy Dukes that she'd bought.
Yeah, the Daisy Dukes were too small on him. And the dad's thing, I was just like, that's, I don't know if you should tie it like that. All right, okay, just go with a shirt.
Probably walk with a regular shirt, but okay.
Yeah, he could have just worn a shirt, like, but he had to tie
it up. The knot is what fits the whole thing off. How's it, how I look, honey? Oh, looking lovely, dear. Thank you.
Niall, if they dub it, you should try for that. I think you're in a good shot.
I'm a carpenter. I gotta work.
They pretend that it's set in New York.
Yeah, sure. Would you like another donut? That kind of way.
Yeah. I think there was some stuff with the teacher as well at school, tearing his shirt off or something. I can't remember the full details.
They say he's bursting out of his pants and he's like, why don't you get new pants? He's like, those are my favorite shorts. And they're like, but you're a growing boy. And he's like, I'm a growing boy too. And he bursts out of his shirt kind of thing. Something like that. Yeah, yeah. I can't remember what happened to go.
No, I can't remember. He was probably involved in Yetis. It normally doesn't.
Terror, misery. Yeah, the usual. Yep.
Standard.
As we get to episode 41, there appeared to be something incredibly horrific about to happen at the very end of this, before it ended. So we're going to do the Sigalkan thirst, is that the teacher's buried up to his neck.
Yeah.
Meditating, and all the
Oh, I remember now. I was laughing really hard at it, yeah.
All the little yetis run backwards and forwards over his head.
And he's shouting at them, saying, like, hey, I'm trying to freaking meditate here.
And Chit and Su Gao are sort of pondering this, and Chit's like, oh, they must really like him. And then you see the Yeti running up about as if you were about to kick a football, being the teacher's head, and then it cuts before he connects.
Well, that would be a bit too bloody for this show. That's more a Ninja Girl type situation.
I was like, crikey. But the rest of it was a bunch of cute kittens annoying the fish-faced guy. Because Kanji Kun's mum doesn't like cats, so he finds this pregnant cat, takes it round. Oh, I can't remember the guy's name. I think I've still failed to write it down.
Kanji is the...
He's the really stern-faced guy.
I don't know. Nerdlinger. I don't know what his name is.
Like, there was a bunch of things in the story that was great. Obviously, the thing of Goma and... Ishibe finding the kittens, and obviously they go straight to the guy who fucking loves cats, and he comes straight to that guy's house.
Yes,
it's just kind of like, it's the closest one here, and also that guy was just rolling around on the floor because it was his day off. It's like ding dong, it's like, can't they see I'm rolling around in here kind of thing.
It was a rainy day, that's why he couldn't do anything else with his day off apart from rolling around.
I don't know, read a book or something. Jesus.
Whatever you need to do to unwind after a fucking hard working week, dude.
To roll around on the carpet?
Yeah, but he's got a fucking back problem, sitting at the office chairs all day, rolling around when he helps it.
It's a pregnant cat as well, isn't it?
It is, yes.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure if they discovered that later, or was that just... Yeah. Okay.
No, he knew he was pregnant, because he knows a lot about cats.
Of course.
He's like the Sakaki of this show. So gives birth to the kittens, but he can't take them home, so they have to live here. And he just continues to move more and more cat stuff into this guy's apartment, so the guy has nowhere for him to live anymore, because it's been taken over by cats.
And it seems like a good idea initially, because he says to Kanji, or is like, I'll mind the cats if you do my work as well as your work at work. Kanji's like, I'll do that. And he's like, sweet, I got a sweet deal. And he, not realizing that Kanji was going to visit like several times a day to play with the cats.
And they both end up making that other guy do both of their work.
Yeah. We're all watching Fizz.
Yep.
But he's really impressive pitcher, San, so that's probably a little bonus coming off of that.
Mm.
And then they've got to do this deal with this really mean customer.
Oh, they got to get him to sign the important documents that we don't need to specify.
Yes.
But finish the deal.
He's really stern. He's very hard to get through to him.
But it's, turns out, luckily, that he likes cats. And luckily, Shibei brings the cats to the meeting.
Because they were crying.
Yes, because they think Kanji's their father.
Oh. And then the boss guy is like, oh, can I pet the kitty? Sure you can, if you sign on the dotted line. Deal. It's done.
So stern people like cats? Is that the lesson?
Well, they shouldn't like misjudge people, you know, have that kind of formidable looking countenance. No, they might have a softer side to them that they don't show too much.
Yeah. I did like that guy's sideburns. They were just like a squiggle on either side of his head.
Yes.
It was pretty good.
Excuse me while I put myself on mute while I cough. Right. Finished. Right. Next up, we've got Makaruna Akuno Gundan, episode 11, Moving In.
They move into the house.
They move into the house, and then...
Well, there's the room over the garage.
Yes.
They very slowly realize that they have enough money.
And then we get the classic comedy thing of dividing up a room.
I realize that the end credits, the room has already been divided, like the posters are in the background and everything. So that was pretty great. But it's like a three... Oh, crap, I forgot what the word is.
It's 4.5 to Tammy Matt size.
That's it.
Room, which is not very big at all. It's probably relatively small. I'd say it's about the size of my bedroom around me right now, but that's your entire apartment. It's not a lot of room.
I mean, like, I've lived in rooms smaller than that, but it's not great.
It's definitely not for three people.
No.
One of who's a talking hippo.
They divvy it up and they figure they'll have space for... Well, your man figures they'll have space for a fabulous dining area.
And after they divide it up, they're like, where's the dining area gone? And they're looking around as if they've mislaid it.
My calculations were perfect. Dear.
And they start arguing over the window and the light switch and you get guys' anime posters he's putting up on the wall.
It's terrible. A poster of anime you haven't seen before.
Yeah, it's really awkward. It's like, I don't know the character. Don't really know how to feel about it. Also they find out that they have to pay that every month.
Yes.
Rather than they thought they just had it now. Like, no, this is rent. Dear.
And that was pretty much it. Were they still arguing by the end?
They were arguing and there was that mysterious bucktooth lady
yes.
Kind of peering in. So I presumably we're eventually going to find out who the fuck that is.
Yeah, she's on the thumbnail for next week. So
yeah, okay.
Hopefully all will be revealed.
Mm.
And hopefully the series carries on. So that's not like the last episode. Next up, we've got 100% Teacher Pascal, episode 10. Danger, keep out, zoo classroom, perfect plate, and 1% Pascal. This, I thought, was the weakest episode so far.
Yeah.
Okay.
There were some okay jokes, but overall, yeah. I get you.
It wasn't dense enough with the jokes.
Right.
What about you, Niall? What do you think?
I did not get around to it. Enough time, so maybe it's for the best.
Yeah, so what happened was Pascal found an elephant. They called the zoo to take the elephant back, but instead they took Pascal. Then it was a month had gone by, and they thought maybe we should look for Pascal. So they went to the zoo, and he turned into like a hairy sort of part lion, part ape creature.
Well, initially he just becomes like a fuzzy Pascal, and they think he's gone feral. And then they come visit again, like, in another month, and he's turned into, like you say, a big lion-looking motherfucker. He's not even wearing the clothes anymore. He just The only way you could identify him as Pascal is the little blue mustache.
Yeah, and they
is still there.
They snap him out of it by waving money at him.
They initially try, you know, classroom things to remind him that he's a teacher, but money is obviously his thing. And he just takes it off like it's a costume?
Yes.
comes back to teach the class, and he brought the...
The class is now at the zoo.
Yeah, yeah. He brought the Monkey Mountain with him, that being all the monkeys. And then it's like, this is no good. We can't teach her this. Okay, cool. So he moves the entire classroom to the zoo.
That was fine. He just could have done with some more jokes.
Yeah, yeah.
I think part of the problem is there's like huge chunks where Pascal's not in it.
Yeah, that's fair enough. I mean, like, they did okay with that, with the post-apocalypse one with the Pascal and
Pascal. That's true, yes. But yeah.
But yeah, yeah, it was more joke-packed.
And then Perfect Plate, was it Prince Pascal this time and Castle Pascal?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Prince Pascal, who's like the new king or whatever, new royal fucking member thing, and has to fend off an attacking army. But fortunately, the castle is sentient. But it's just decided to fuck off.
Yes, because it's like, you lost, mate. Better bugger off.
So it just flies away. Who knows where it would land next? The end.
And then 1% Pascal again was, did you spot 1% Pascal during the episode?
They give you a quick, like, using some of the prior footage kind of thing.
Yeah,
quick. It's like, have you seen him yet? Oh, is he there? Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, he's... like, impossible to fucking see, even if he was there.
He wasn't there. I went back and checked.
You did check, okay.
Yes. But yeah, they claimed he was on, as Pascal entered the school on a motorcycle at the start of the episode, 1% Pascal was also riding a 1% motorcycle on the mud guard of the motorcycle 100% Pascal was riding.
They are trying to, like... or they're claiming they're going to have like way more episodes because they went, I think 1% Pascal is actually 1,000th of a Pascal or something like that. It's like they're ambitious. You got to give them that.
Yes. And then the girl flicks 1% Pascal off a table because he's doing loops on his little motorcycle.
Yeah, just doing donuts on the table.
Yeah. The end. And then in Bono Bono episode 49... I Like Walks, in which Chipmunk and Chipmunk's dad rather, and Bono Bono bond over their love of walks, while Chipmunk gets increasingly angry at them.
Yeah, because Chipmunk brought Bono to the walk because he hates going for walks with his dad because his dad is fucking insane. But it turns out Bono is as insane in exactly the same way. The kind of boring insanity, you know?
Yeah, I was going to say, because Chipmunk... is ludicrously insane, the point at which he makes his point when he's doing I like walks.
So he's just like walks because you can go wherever you want. I can do that. It's fucking taken up by a hawk kind of shit.
He's yelling at them from inside the hawk's nest. And it's the way when he's doing his impersonation of them is the fact that the line around his body is different to how he's normally drawn.
Yeah, it's like a waddly kind of line because he's taking the piss. Good stuff. I do like this show.
Yeah. Yeah, this reminded me weirdly of the Fast Show sketch with Mark Williams as the guy who's trying to give that guy directions. What if you fell in a hole with an owl? Because Chipmunks, they're like saying, Bono's claiming that he likes to walk anywhere regardless of what might be at the end of the path.
Because I think he wants to walk down a path that Chipmunk knows stinks at the end.
Oh, yeah, it goes into the damp part of the forest. All you'll find there is a mole sitting in the dirt eating worms to his heart's content.
Yeah, that part sucks, dude. Don't go down that path. Come on. I liked Chipmunk's dad's... his thing of... it's like, oh, you like to take walks like this, do you? And he like walks... like, leaps through the trees like a fucking ninja, gets attacked by a snake. Like, that's the kind of walks you like, right? he's trying to be hip with the kids, I think. I'm not exactly sure how being attacked by a snake is helping.
But... I liked his punishment for Chipmunk showing up late. Was just lifting his arms up.
Okay, you know, last time I said I was going to lift your arms up like this, didn't I? It's like, yeah, you did. Okay, now I'm going to have to do it. Lifts arms up.
Bono's
Bono wants to do it as well.
Bono, you're quite large. Can you do it yourself?
It's not as fun.
It's not meant to be fun. Hey, you don't even have to watch the episode now. Me and Dwayne will stack it out for you.
Yeah, no, it's so packed with silly fucking things in it. Yeah.
Yeah. Good, good, good stuff. Anything to add, Niall?
No, that's about it. Really.
Sorry.
And Ninja Girl and Samurai Master, episode 37, History of 100 Years, in which we get a non-informative recap of what happened the 100 years leading up to this episode. And also,
bunch of stuff happened. That's why the Warring States is...
Consult your local library.
Yes. And also, Nobunaga tries to rein in the Shogun's powers.
Which is, he's kind of, like, taken about it before. I'm a Shogun, I'm not a top guy in the country. Yes, but, you know, I didn't want to tell you, but you're kind of a fucking idiot, so just leave all this to me.
And so they're going to draw up two papers to rein in his powers, and Mr. Hide's like, I think we might need a few more than that, and then we get a cut away to what the Shogun's like.
I did like the way it was saying the Mitsuhide. Initially, it's like, how do you feel about this guy who's eventually going to betray me? And the guy's like, I think we need more laws. It's like he's unhappy with it, but it's like, no, the fucking Shogun's in Egypt. Yeah.
And then we sort of have explained that while everything's been going Nobunaga's way up to this point, from next episode on, it's going to be a struggle.
Hmm.
And we also check in on his sister and her husband, and we're like, okay, yeah, they seem very happy now, but people who know their history know they're in for some real disappointment.
Like, is this show going to get super dark? What the fuck?
It may well do. Yes.
Okay.
There's a lot of history to cover, and they've wished for it to run as they did the last episode. Who else showed up? This Hattori Hanzo showed up, didn't he? He was looking forward to seeing Chidori again.
Yeah. Well, we're kind of seeing all the guys you've met in previous episodes so far. Seeing, oh, we want to be a big meme with Nobunaga. We should go see him. Yeah, and they've seen all those dudes. Who else is there? No. Okay, anybody who's been in the show so far is going to be making an appearance in the next episode or two.
Yeah.
Look forward to it.
Yep, yep, yep. And then on to the longer things. And did you watch this, Niall? Yu-Gi-Oh! Vereins?
Didn't get time for it, sorry.
That's okay.
I tried, like, you know, a few separate attempts to ground it, but then something that seemed to be more pressing at the time I wanted to do it. So,
fair enough.
I'm still slightly confused as to what happened, even though I watched it.
Yes. Also, first off, it's Yu-Gi-Oh! Brains. It's a clever...
Why does it say Yu-Gi-Oh! Brains, though?
Because it's a clever pun, because V's can be pronounced as B's in Japanese.
Oh, so okay, that makes sense.
It is a hilarious pun, and so now I'm going to call myself Brian. I'm going to be totally cyberpunk and spell my name V-R-I-A-N.
Nice. You need brains to operate VR. You see?
Because it's they call it Brain Link, is the VR thing going in there. Yeah, it's quite a while since I watched it, so let me try and remember what's happening. So, there's this guy who is known as Playmaker in the world of
Second Life.
Yes,
fucking know.
Or whatever it is, yes. In Brain Link. And he's trying to find what happened to his brother.
I thought it was your man's brother, the guy who ran the food stand. I thought it was your man's brother, and it was his past or something.
Maybe
I got it backwards.
Maybe anyway, someone's brother and someone and his he's trying to uncover the truth of his past. But I thought that might be also his missing brother.
That's the dude who ran the food stall's brother. The food stall / secret fucking high tech kit place. I don't know.
Yeah. Anyway, he's basically the guy standing between these two other organizations. They are the Knights of Hanoi, who are basically cyber terrorists who are trying to destroy Cybersay. And then there's Soul Technology, who are the people who are trying to find the Cybersay world. And caught between them is obviously the Playmaker and this mysterious artificial intelligence program called Ignis. And in this first episode, basically, Playmaker traps Ignis in his Cybersay deck. Because apparently your decks in this world have can have artificial intelligences, which will recommend moves for you when you duel.
So the game plays itself now.
Why even bother?
I don't think we actually see a duel.
No, we don't.
In this episode. Like, we see,
they start surfing, literally surfing in the web.
Because there's one
which presumably is going to lead to it. Yeah,
because they're going to. There's supposed to be. Oh yeah, if there's like winds, you can. They literally surf on winds in this as well. So they literally surf the web in this. We see like duels taking place, but not really the details of them between these two celebrity duelists or charisma duelists is what they call them.
That's the word. Yeah. They got big posters up in. I initially thought that was in town, but I think that was up in the virtual reality.
I think
town?
It was. Yes, it's.
I'm never sure when they're in actual fucking town and in virtual reality, because in the virtual reality town they're watching fucking telly.
I think that was the point. Yes, I think he was supposed to make you think it was happening in the real world, and then all of a sudden,
holy shit, that guy's attacking everyone with a dragon. It's like, oh wait, no, this is VR world.
A dragon suddenly crashed through the sky, and it's like, oh, what?
Yeah, and also I think he gets away. The main guy gets away with like pretending to be. Or having the alternate identity of Playmaker, because everyone seems to have the exact same avatar as their physical body. Being that guy with the giant mouth from the start of the episode. Except for him, who changes his hair into an even more ridiculous fucking combination of shapes and colors.
He turns his hair into a Yu-Gi-Oh! Protagonist's haircut.
It already is a Yu-Gi-Oh! It's three different colors.
Yeah.
I mean, no, I guess two kinds of blue. I guess that makes it pretty subdued.
Yes, it's
VR.
Oh, dear.
Blue Angel and Go Onizuka, the two charisma duelists we see. Who no doubt will have to battle our hero and then become his friends.
Yeah. Because I think he saves the girl from the dragon fire. I mean, like, saves her avatar. I don't fucking know.
Yeah. It's. It was good in letting you know who are the factions, who's going up against what in terms of names they're all after. But as I said, it kind of pulls the rug out from underneath you towards the end. Where it's like, you thought this was the real world. What if none of this is the real world? What if everybody's in a VR space? What if you're buying virtual reality hot dogs from that guy's food van?
The other thing was he has this weird tick where the guy with the giant mouth, he like lists three negative points, but then as a counter, he lists three positive points about the guy as well. That's an odd character trait.
And he doesn't seem to understand it either as well. Cause after he's done it, he's like, oh, there are threes again.
Yeah.
So I assume that will have some other meaning later on.
Play into his deck or something.
Oh, and there's people who are just chess pieces, talking chess pieces.
Yeah, a guy talking to a literal fucking bishop.
Yeah.
Mm.
I quite enjoyed it. To be honest, it was.
You want
to
watch more?
I don't think we've got time to watch more.
That's true, I suppose.
Let's put it like that.
Will you like it still when you have to get down to playing the game?
I tend to be fine with those. I mean, I watch so much GX, so.
Yeah. Okay. That's. I think that's pretty game-heavy as far as I remember.
Yeah.
I've still been looking at the rules before I knew way to summon and things, and it didn't make any sense to me until just now when I found out they actually changed some of the rules like a little while ago for how teams get summoned and what teams are villains like now. So it's like, okay, that explains a lot. it's probably another one of those systems that I just ignore the use of and just like work with whatever I can get my head around. Probably won't be this.
No. Right, yeah. And also you can now take the moral high ground against Konami and not buy the cards as well.
True.
They're terrible. But, medical support.
I at least don't buy him, like, you know, like, first hand, you know. I buy him somebody else, and they don't even get the money.
Yeah.
Righty-ho, that was Yu-Gi-Oh! Reigns. So, guys, take it away and talk about the remaining episodes of Attack on Titan.
Yes, 3-6 right. Charge and 3-7 Scream, which bring us all the way to the finale of the series.
Yep.
It's kind of called, long story short, that chase is continuing, and the guys are trying to just bring him down to get him away. They managed to catch up with him, and they're kind of trying to basically persuade Berthold to fucking, hey, let Aaron get out of there. Newcastle gets there first, and it's like, you know, as it goes from, it gets kind of guarded like under Reiner's neck, under his armor titan form, like it's kind of guys like that. But she is just out for blood. She's just kind of peeking in between like the fingers of the giant hand, going, I'm gonna get you, Berthold. I'm gonna kill you.
I initially thought he grew some shit out of his neck or something, like some extra fucking muscles or plates or whatever. But then I realized, like, on the outside shot where he's just like holding his hands around his own neck, and then she's just caught onto him, like peeking through the fingers. That was fucking great.
Just look in her eyes. It's unblinking, like filled with malice.
Yeah. Murderous intent, I think, is the way to go with it.
But also trying to take Christa back as well. Ymir has explained herself once, saying, "Look, I might have said I did it to kind of save you, but I might have did it to save myself from like for where we're going to." But Christa is like, "It's all right. I said stick by a thicker thin, buddy." So she's going to stick around with her no matter what happens anyway.
And
but pursuing that, then she's like, Ymir, I've run back for Mikasa, please. Like, this we got the sea sense. And Ymir, you know, she wants to, like, help. You know, this, it's more complicated than you realize. And Mikasa, this whole thing. It's like, I don't care.
It's like, if you get in my way, I'll fucking kill you. Which is kind of like, oh, shit.
It's sort of like you said something along the lines of, no, I've run out of, like, patience and time and compassion and room in my heart to care for any more people than I have to. So it's fucking going to be, I take you and Aaron back, or I take Aaron back and leave you to die. What's it going to be, Christa? Come on.
There's a lot of kind of, like, the different factions kind of playing off each other in this. And it's basically like the two spy titans versus a bunch of other titans, also versus a bunch of the scouts. But yeah, like you have a lot of the scouts just planted on the armor titan, trying to fucking talk them down. Yeah, that was an interesting one as well. Yeah,
yeah. Some of the other guys turn up there and they're like saying, like, Berthold, buddy, come on! Remember, like back in training camp, we used to be buddies, we used to be friends. Oh, it's kind of fucked up now thinking that we're sleeping next to the guy who killed a lot of our mates, but, you know, that's the way it is, right, buddy? Isn't that right? And, yeah, Berthold was kind of like not having much of him saying, I didn't do it because I wanted to. Who wants to do this because I want to? When Mikasa does, because she's like, don't bother to him. Listen, Berthold, let's come on out of there. We're not going to hurt you. Just going to cut you into little pieces. Like, Mikasa doesn't have none of this whatsoever. Yeah. She just wants to go and kill all these guys and go home.
Like, the other scouts are just, like, panicking. It's like, okay, you have your man, what's it, Erwin?
Erwin, he's, like, he's formulated a strategy, which basically involves getting the Titan, the wild Titan, should we say, to kind of circle back around and just creating a massive stampede of them to run over the escaping Reiner and them. Yeah,
they're basically using themselves as bait for the wild titans to attack the two spy titans. And that kind of gets reversed on him in the next episode, which is quite nice. But as he's going, like, okay, just get fucking get Aaron and get out, that's the fucking mission. And like he gets like chomped, and I was like, fucking hell. I did not expect that.
But he has like one arm and his teeth is brushing by and he's like, don't mind me.
Follow the mission. Yeah. And I didn't expect him to show up later on like fucking bleeding out with one arm. Because I was like, oh, as soon as generally you get chomped, you're done. But this guy's just too badass.
You're kind of burying the lead on that there because at this point, now when people are getting kind of getting caught up in this melee, like Reiner's getting held down by the Titans who are on top of him, so that's creating an opening. Armin's jumped down on top of there, and Berthold's about to escape, and Armin doesn't know what to do. Jesus, I'm here for myself. He's going to escape, and then you got things back to, if you want to fight this war, you got to give up something, you know, you got to give up, you know, maybe freedom or something else like that. And he thinks back, hey, Brotoad, where are you going to? You're just going to run away? If your buddy Annie behind, Annie being the other, like, Titan who was hidden in their ranks. And he's like, you know where Annie is right now? She's at the bottom of the lowest dungeon in the middle of the capital city, getting tortured to death. Not, well, actually not quite to death. Just as much as the regeneration of that armor is obviously just kind of Rilo Berthold. But you're kind of thinking, wow, Armin, that is he's vicious.
Because he generally, like, he's the guy with the plan, he's the thinker guy, and he's using it to, like, personally attack someone. I don't think he's ever done that before.
He's usually a very nice young boy, and then he's just pulling this.
Well, I guess he has been betrayed at this stage, yeah.
Hmm. All these, like, you know, these children, basically, are just becoming this cold, hardened warriors. It's kind of cool in one sense, but also like, wow, these innocents gone forever, you know?
Mm. Yeah, it's interesting to watch, but it's horrible to watch, sure.
Yeah, but as I said, that's enough of a distraction for Erwin to swing in there with one arm and chop up Roberto, like, and just kind of chop Erwin loose, rather, and then make away with him.
And so Erwin and Mikasa are running on the... they're getting away on a horse, and they get, like, smacked off it. And wouldn't you know it, it's that Titan that ate Erwin's mother.
Creepy smiley one, yeah.
It's like, well, I figured that had to be a bit more to it than just happened to come across it, but that might have been the case here.
Yeah. Erwin is trying to do, although I just chopped on my hand and tighten up, but I can't do it because she seems to be kind of something freaked out by seeing the Titan kill his mother. Then Pain swoops in, the old buddy, the wall guard,
and
the strategy is trying to have a go at them. He's doing pretty well now as well.
He's getting the hits in where he can, cutting it in the Achilles tendon, that kind of thing.
Yeah. And it's kind of carnage all around because, you know, all the rest of the group are kind of falling prey because that Titan, that Stampede, is kind of, it's got nowhere to go now. Also, Reiner, though, is covered up and Titans are weighing him down. He's just, like, lobbing them like artillery, like fucking out of a catapult and crushing people underneath them.
And, he's lobbing them ahead of the retreating scouts as well because it's kind of like, I just have to fucking slow them down kind of thing. And your man Erwin keeps getting picked up. It's like, I got you, sir. Don't worry about it. It's like, or he's giving an order to some guy. And as soon as he turns around, that guy's currently being eaten or something. It's like everyone steps in to fucking help him out with his one arm and fucking they get killed for their trouble. Yeah. I was like, Jesus, this sucks.
It seems like it's going bad. Like, Haynes as well. He puts up a good fight, but he gets gnashed in the end. And everyone doesn't know what to do because he's fucking biting. He's biting his teeth so much he's like drawing gouts of blood out of them. It's not doing anything.
I like the thing with Mikasa is apparently going to confess her love to him or something like that, and he just stands up because he's just a big ball of fury. Where it's like, no, I'm not doing this scene. I'm doing the scene where I fucking throw a punch at a Titan because fuck it. If that's how I'm going to go out, that's how I'm going to go out.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of weird because they were raised kind of like brother and sister.
But that's like a trope, you know.
Yeah, it's like, But she's kind of calmed down from the bloodlust a bit, you know, just to kind of say, you know, like, of everything you've done, you know, when I had nothing before, and kind of when you came along and, you know, being raised together with you gave me a reason to live. Also gave me this cool scarf, so, you know, just thanks for giving me, like, a reason to be around.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, well, I'll be around for a long time after that, and he just kind of rages out and
You got the slow motion of like Titans closing it around him. There's like one kind of peering in from the back. You got the smiling one reaching down for him, kind of thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, he throws a punch at it
and stops it.
Yes, doesn't grow. I figured he was going to grow huge and punch it or something, but it's a lot more interesting.
All of a sudden, every wild Titan in the field, you see this kind of flash like appearing in Reiner and Berto's mind as well. It's like, and then all of a sudden, that smiling Titan is getting sworn by all the wild ones, and they're tearing it to shreds.
Yeah. So apparently, he can direct Titans with his rage now.
Yep. why turn into a big giant monster yourself? We can get other giant monsters to fight for you.
Yeah, obviously the other scouts kind of use this as a means to escape. I think he also shouts at Reiner as he's leaving, isn't it?
Oh, he sets them all on those guys as well.
I mean, he sets them on him with a shout because he starts directing his ire in that direction. And then all the Titans are like, oh, that way, okay. They all leg towards it.
That gives them enough time to kind of get away. Also, as well, in amongst all this, Ymir is still being indecisive about what the fuck she wants to do. Like she wants to make sure Krista is safe, but just knows it's safer to go along with the Titans or to go along with humanity. But
she's wondering if she'll be like forgiven because, yeah, that kind of thing. She wasn't a sleeper agent, but she decided to work with them because it would achieve her goals. But she's like, is it safer for her to stay in? And when she sees Eren has that, it gives her hope that they could survive within the walls, that kind of thing. Whatever this special fucking ability is.
Yeah, and she needs to know that something is coming, something is going to like happen that...
Yes.
It seemed can't be averted by a regular means. It's going to be some kind of inevitable catastrophe that there was some kind of ticking
mass
time
extinction
bomb
or something. Yeah, yeah.
I'm assuming maybe it's something like they've established like the walls are made of like hardened Titan skin. There's a Titan like... at least one Titan inside the wall. It could be more. Is it something like eventually those things are just gonna like, you know, just fucking come out of hibernation and there'll be no walls for anybody to hide behind and then...
Yeah, yeah. The other suggestion is later on where they're investigating that village that, yep, apparently everyone there turned into Titans. Maybe that's it or something, that it's you just break out in Titans. So it's just inevitable how it goes down.
Which I found built to like a nice kind of like crescendo there. Like it felt like it just came at least maybe because we've been kind of running this way for the last four or five episodes. It just comes to this head very quickly.
I mean, like I nearly wish they kind of spent an episode on just the end of it here because the last few episodes, while they've all been part of the chase, there's been some that have been like, yeah, you could have fucking pared this down and done a lot better with it. It feels a little rushed as a summation of events, you know?
I think I felt just right to me.
Okay.
I'm happy that they kind of took out as much as they were able to. They felt they were able to produce for a season and do a short season as well. They have already had like the next part announced for I think early-ish in 2018 anyway. So.
Right.
As long of a way between this season and the previous one. So that's good and all. And we left a few things to kind of ponder over in the meantime anyway. Like, you know, Ymir kind of dropped that she took the power of the Titans from one of their comrades and she's offering herself as a sort of a consolation prize for Burton and Reiner to bring home.
We didn't do the main mission, but we have some interesting intel in Ymir, yeah.
Yeah. And then, you know, well, everyone, you know, is kind of building up the resolve. We're going to, like, you know, even though we're going to break down this wall, you know, we're so close to the truth. And then everyone's kind of gearing up. Yeah, we're going to get out there. And then a kind of sweeping shot across the country to the Beast Titan perched on top of a wall. And then there's some really muscly, shirtless guy with long hair and glasses and a beard. They're saying, it's like, yes, not what if it was something like, you know, not soon enough or something like that.
Yeah, some other mysterious figure. Question, was that wall on the outside of all the walls we're aware of so far?
No.
Because I'm trying to keep track of the walls. I was like, wait, okay, now we're in wall rows. Now we're in thing. That kind of way.
It's like there's three concentric walls. So the outermost one is the one that fell when Berthold, now you know, kicked it in and let it out, let them all in. Everybody retreated behind. Then I think the outer one was Wall Maria. And then there's... almost. Anyways, everyone was kind of evacuated inside the innermost wall after news of this outbreak came in because shit, we've got to fucking get everybody.
Yeah, they mentioned that with the supplies or.
Yeah, no, there's like an underground like slum kind of city where people have been staying. There's no room to put them in. They expand upon that one of the like spin-off manga or something like that.
Okay.
And then they established just there was no leak because, you know, probably the people who were inside the wall got turned into Titans.
Yeah, so they have Connie like giving a report, like really distraught with a picture of his mom and dad.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, yeah, my mother turned into a Titan. Don't know how to feel about that. Bad, I guess.
He's just not completely shell-shocked and all. He's ever just hangy, just giving this, like, giving this account. This robotic, you know, I suppose he would be. Been through. So, yeah, I'd say that definitely overall an improvement on what the first series did, even though that got like better towards the end and all of this, and just watch it the right way, and it's a little better now. But it's just kind of just better produced and better planned out, and they had this
better paced overall. Sure.
Yeah, even though there's more comic like after they could have brought in, they thought, no, we'll just do, you know, go up to this point. It's all exciting bits. And I suppose as well as we're getting to more exciting bits of the story as well, so it's going to be a little more. So grab a lot more eyeballs that way. So yeah, look forward to whenever it comes back. But I'll have time to kind of mull over a couple of things until then.
Yeah.
And Haybot was cancelled for golf this week. Right, on to...
How was the golf?
They didn't put that on Crunchyroll, unfortunately, so I can't tell you. Right, next up, Tiger Mask episode 36, Four Tigers.
I'm seeing double here.
That's exactly what I said in my first note. I'm seeing double, eight tigers. So this episode we learn that Mr. X is smarter than Yuji Nagata, because Yuji Nagata's like, I'm sure they're going to be saving the third for the last match. So
yeah, they're fucking saving the guy. It's like, no, not yet. We can't use the fucking guy who never fucking does anything yet. You always fucking say that.
So we'll put the two tigers and we'll save Okada for the last match.
Even though they were in the fucking last match. In the wreck. Like,
they said, like, we're good for a boss, we can do it.
Yeah, they're
all. And also, I Tiger Dark, like, once I get back into the fun, say, now let's just get my instincts back. I gotta get back in the ring and, you know, keep the momentum going.
Yeah.
Whereas Mr. X is like, oh, well, if we put Tiger the Great in now and we win, that's it, won. But if we lose and
they're in with a shot,
Miracle One loses the next one, then at least Tiger the Great's had a match to recover.
Yeah, it's that's pretty smart. The other guy should have done that as well.
Yeah, and if Miracle One happened to win, unlikely as that would be, then that's good too. So.
Yeah, because Miracle's hey, why do you think I can't win? I can win.
We just need you to wear him out. It's fine. It's like, no, I'm pretty good at wrestling. You're pretty good at cheating, dude.
Pretty good at wrestling when it was like you and five other guys in the ring to help you out.
Sure.
And currently we're down to three.
Yeah, and none of them have numbers. None of the other guys on his team.
No. So we get...
the second and the third.
Oh, yeah, they do.
So we get the second and the third.
He's fine, yeah.
Versus... Tiger the Mask and Tiger the Dark. And Tiger Mask is too full of vengeance. He's being sloppy because he wants to...
fucking wreck him.
Yeah, kill. The third. So, yeah, it's up to Takuma to be the cool-headed one. Plus, he's got a new finisher.
It's actually pretty cool. He does it like a bunch of times, though.
He does, yes. Where is he just like cross? I can't remember what it's called. But he crosses his arms. That's it. Yes.
Like it's like your man tries to do what's the spinning devil tornado or something?
Devil tornado, and like, he finally sees that big long wind up and dodges it for the first time ever.
Yeah, and he dodges it with his arms up in the air, which is like the specific defense against it, and then flies up and catches him in. Is it in the face or in the throat?
It goes right for the neck. But
yes.
Okay.
I saw a diving tackle, like right at your neck, and then you have kind of swing the arm out then for a bit of extra damage and impact.
It spins.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if he was going for the neck or the chin. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It sends them spinning as well, often.
Yeah, because he pulls the arms apart and that spins them in the air. I guess. What was it? Crossbow.
Yeah,
crossbow.
And it's a pretty good finisher because you can just do it like by doing a squat and then launching into it.
Yep. And so the good guys win.
Oh, forgetting as well that, you know, Tiger Mask is at the mercy of Tiger the Great, and it's like, now I'm going to put on that mask. That mask belongs to Tiger's Den. you haven't got the right to wear it, tears it off, and everyone knows now that Naoto is Tiger Mask, including...
Well, I mean, like, anyone who knows him, no one else knows, like, in the audience who Naoto is.
And also, Takuma's dad can walk again.
Yes. He's like, get up, son! You gotta get up!
I get up, because Mickey right loves you.
dear.
Yes, I mean... In Lucha's stuff, I think what happened... Oh, it was in during when they had the CMLL guys over in New Japan this year. Mm. There was a match where Tiger Mask 4, and I can't remember who was on the Rudo side, but Tiger Mask 4 had his mask taken off, and one of the Rudos had their mask taken off, and they ended up putting the wrong mask back on, and Jushin Liger kept on attacking... Tiger Mask 4, thinking he was the other guy.
Even though he's obviously wearing completely different tights.
Yes.
Right.
I think the Rudo had like a full body suit as well, whereas Tiger Mask 4 didn't.
He's changed identities.
Your costume change won't fool me.
dear.
Yeah, the mask being ripped off and tail being put over the head is familiar. And say, what the Bushi in... Los Ingobernables, he often has two masks on, so if you take his first mask off, he's got another one underneath. Just
pretty
like
smart.
Whatever his face was in the Miracle number 4, was it?
I was thinking as well, Lucha Master from Air Master.
That's true as well, yes.
He has like an angry luchador mask under his regular mask.
So you know it's gotten real. Okay.
Now, apparently Kota Ibushi has been seen recording lines for Tiger Mask double, and so people are like, is he going to show up right at the end, because he's the guy who's been playing Tiger Mask double on the shows this year, or are they going to do a second season? I'm assuming he's showing up right at the end as some sort of joke.
Did the original Tiger Mask die, or
no, Tiger Mask 2 is dead.
Okay. No, sorry. In the show.
Okay, right. Here, I've been debating this online with people, so I believe in the continuity of the anime, assuming they're not paying attention to Tiger Mask 2, he is not dead. If they're following,
I was thinking he could show up as the original Tiger Mask or something.
In the continuity of the comic, and I believe in Tiger Mask 2, he is dead.
Right. Okay.
They did a happier ending in the anime, because in the comic he saved a child from being run over. And then to prevent anyone discovering Tiger Mask's identity, he threw his mask into a river in his dying actions.
But he still had a face, or did he, like, his face get pulled off or something?
Well, no, he didn't have the mask on him when he died, you see. So it was just, it's Naoto Date has died, this guy who helps run an orphanage.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Less orphans in Tiger Mask double as well.
I mean, Naoto's
an orphan,
I suppose.
Yes. That's it. He doesn't hang out at an orphanage with a load of orphans.
Well, he was orphaned as an adult.
He was, yes.
Yeah. Not that that's great, but, you know.
No. So I don't know whether he is dead. And I believe at the end of the anime, he was on the original Tiger Mask was unmasked, and everyone knew who he was anyway. So I don't know what continuity they're playing with. It seems to be the anime, but ignoring Tiger Mask 2. But of course, if Universal Pro Wrestling show up at the end of this, then they're also playing with Tiger Mask 2. Because it could be like they defeat GWM, but then the villains from Tiger Mask 2 suddenly reappear. and then the manga of Tiger Mask 2 is even more confusing, because apparently they used non-New Japan wrestlers as cameos at the start before they'd signed the deal with New Japan Wrestling.
Oh, okay.
And then once that happened, then it was only New Japan wrestlers showed up. Because Tiger Mask 2 is a lot more like this is in terms of incorporating New Japan people into it. Because Antonio Inoki is basically the third character in Tiger Mask 2. Right, on to the finale of the sports day in My Hero Academia. It is Todoroki versus Bakugo, in which we get an anticlimax, but that is the point.
Yeah.
Because even the character...
We had the high point like an episode ago, two episodes ago.
And even Bakugo is annoyed at there being an anticlimax.
That's still a pretty sweet fight.
It is, yes. And it plays to Todoroki's character and Bakugo's character. And but yeah, you definitely feel like, oh, that's, yes, this arc did end with the Midoriya Todoroki thing, and we are actually in the other arc now.
Mm. Yeah.
I'm kind of actually happy kind of went this way instead, because, like I said a little while back, I was expecting that we'd reach the emotional climax of the school sports day, so this is going to get invaded by villains as well, based on upcoming characters who are going to appear. And I thought, actually, no, it didn't. It went this way, because thematically, this is more what the show is about. And that whole thing where the villains invade the heroes in training, whatever thing, right in the middle of it, has been done to death. Like before, anyway. So yeah, I'm glad this was the outcome instead. It's been a lot more. I don't know. A lot more substantial, I guess, for things going on.
It does it nicely, because while it is the end of the sports thing, should be the high point. Obviously, the high point has been a while back, and it's kind of setting up Todoroki on. Like, I think he specifies, like, this is my starting point of who I want to be as a hero. Like later in the episode. It's setting him up for his next thing. It's setting
Iida
up for his fucking next thing. Jesus, that's some fucking drama added in on top.
Yeah.
Poor guy.
Though I did you see whoever on Twitter had edited it in to be like that Control Alt Delete?
Yes,
everyone... the last JPEG.
God damn it.
So unfortunately no Stain, so we don't get to follow up with the villains trying to recruit Stain this week.
I think we see him like in a alley, silhouetted kind of thing.
Yeah, I think we just get, and you were right, he did say All Might last week. I forgot. That was
okay, I was wondering that I just...
Yes. No, you definitely did say...
I just picture it, because...
Yes.
Right.
All Might is the only guy who will let kill him.
Yeah. I still think like he looks like a lanky Ninja Turtle.
He was ugly enough.
All Might shows up to give everyone hugs.
And completely messes up his lines.
Right. Yes.
That was pretty great.
It was just really nice and all.
He had some genuine and personal to say to each of the guys. I thought that was pretty great.
Yeah, it's like Tokuyami, if I'm saying, like, you know, good job, kid, but, you know, don't rely too much on your shadow, build up, your own strength, too. Then you can take on anything in the world. It's like, oh, yeah, thanks, man. That's really nice.
And that's where we get the sort of thing of, oh, Iida had to go off, so he's not here to receive his hug.
Yeah, I was wondering. I was like, surely he would have got third as well. And I was like, oh, yeah, of course.
Oh, yeah.
There's a guy who needs one.
His brother just about survived Stain's attack. I think I say that, like a minute or two later, and he would have been dead.
Hmm. He's pretty out of it on the hospital, on the recovery from surgery, I imagine.
Mm.
And, of course, they have Bakugo in chains in the first place podium.
He's chained up like a fucking, like the most dangerous fucking serial killer they know kind of thing. He's just there squirming and screaming and shit. It's pretty great. Everyone's like, the fuck, dude, you got for us? Calm down.
Here's your rattle.
I don't want it.
But, he's upset because Todoroki didn't use his fire on him, so he wasn't trying
Todoroki
as hard.
Todoroki held back a bit, yeah.
Yes, because Todoroki was thinking more about having to go, he should go and visit his mum than continue taking part in this tournament.
Yeah, I mean, like, his part in the tournament ended when he finally figured out what Midoriya was trying to tell him.
Yes.
It was just kind of funny because he kept obviously progressing up through the ranks because he's ridiculously OP. And Bakugo just getting really frustrated with him was like, oh, I'm not fucking good enough for you, that kind of thing. I'm not as good as Deku, is the way he's seeing it, because he went all out against his old rival, I suppose.
Yeah, I'm curious whether his thing counts as two quirks or one, if both of them together.
Like
are
if
one
it's
quirk.
Temperature control kind of thing.
Yes. The reason I did, because this was the episode where I was like, oh, that's a really dramatic thing which could happen later in the series if it is two quirks.
Right. It's like, what's Iceman and the X-Men's power? It's like he can control the temperature of freaking... not water molecules.
At the moment,
like that in the air.
Yeah, I'd say he's now like a a devil fruit user, the paramecia, the ones, the ones who can change into their element.
Yeah,
I didn't change it a while ago. He's like fucking all. It's a kind of level of mutant, you know, who is basically an immortal because
he's an Omega mutant. He's not an eternal. An external.
In his eyes thing, it's essentially impossible to kill him, is my understanding.
Yeah.
Like, I'm talking like the basic of the starting power. He could control the temperature control bit of your brain. I've forgotten that. And control air temperature around him, which I guess is like if you can make it cold, you can make it hot. You could look at it as the same kind of power.
Anyway, we're getting a new opening theme to My Hero Academia.
Oh, excellent.
They just announced that.
I wasn't too thrilled with the one they had here.
I don't know. I quite like it. I guess I've gotten used to it as well, though. That's the other thing.
Yeah, I can't remember it.
I mostly remember I watched it like once or twice, but like I like know all the everybody's doing their stretches before they go out to some hero business. Like, right, very sensible. The one I like, you know, pull a heavy,
the
bank robber.
It's the sports day. You got to do, you know, you got to warm up for it.
Yeah, I think I got to the position where I was just moving the bar a minute and a half along once it started.
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough.
I think that was pretty much everything which happened this week. Next week they get to pick their superhero names, so I can finally start calling him Red Riot, even though I've been calling him Red Riot all the way through.
I think, I hope it'll be easier for me to remember their fucking names.
I think it's a combination of
I've difficulty with Japanese names, but also... It's like you can call Batman, but if you called him Bruce or Bruce Wayne, Bruce is too personal. And Bruce Wayne is kind of like, that still seems a bit too informal.
There's a couple of characters' names who I think are really difficult to even say, let alone remember.
Okay. It should be fun regardless.
It's more because there's so many of them that, you get... It's easy to get mixed up, and then you're just getting the names of the first like hero class, and they bring in these other classes alongside as well. Like, I can't remember all these guys' names as well. I know our teachers feel as character.
Yeah. Now. Oh, there'll be a load of superheroes to know as well because they're going to go off on their internship thing.
I like the bit in this as well, where because obviously it ends with Todoroki. You actually meet one of his siblings. I think it's his sister.
Yes. Yeah.
Him meeting up with his mother again, but then you have the other characters and their home life as well.
Oh yeah, the Oshiko's parents scaring the life out of her.
Super creepy,
but that was so nice though.
Yeah, it was nice. And also you have Midoriya explaining to his mother, I was like, actually it turns out I totally had a quirk. Who would have thunk it, you know, a very bad excuse.
Yeah, because it's kind of like the cat's out of the bag at this point.
And then her mother was like, "When I recorded the whole thing on TV, I cried this many times.
I only fainted this many times, but that was through dehydration." I was like, "Come on, we'll watch it. It's in HD."
I forgot that we hear Bakugo's mother, though we don't see her yet. We're not going to see her for a long time.
Yeah, she's just shouting at him.
I have seen like a picture of her in the camera, and she's like just him, but is just like she's literally the head off him. Or rather, he's the head off of her.
Yes.
More accurately.
Yes. Righty ho. On to Rage of Bahamut, episode 11, Declaration of War, in which Mary Poppins breaks through a maximum security stockade.
Like every episode, I'm just like, some character does something to make them my favorite character besides Nina. And in this episode, it's
Rita.
I couldn't think of the zombie girl's name.
And Rocky.
And Rocky. Rocky has a fucking
Rocky's favorite
scene.
Character. I don't know.
Oh, no, he's pretty cool, too.
I don't think the boys are in it at all this episode.
They're not at all.
At the end shouting, I think.
Yeah, I think they're doing the preview. Preview, yes. Kaiser does get mentioned as possibly being an opportunity to turn into a red dragon, but she doesn't seem convinced.
Kaiser's hot, right?
Maybe. It's like, where are we going to find a hot guy in prison?
We'll have to break into the men's prison. Oh, God.
They've not so much shackled Nina as given her a weapon to use.
Yeah, it turns out she knows a bit of capoeira, and a ball and chain is just going to make that better for her.
Like, getting hit by that, like, pool guards are going to be taking early retirement. and the shattered fucking shoulder blades you want to get out of that.
Like, the only time that ball has slowed her down is when she was, like, when she got through those freaking bars because she's so goddamn skinny anyway. And it's just like, oh, this is mildly inconveniencing right now.
Just bend the bars, and there we go.
It barely slowed them down, yeah. Slowed them down enough for a guard to go, hey, get back to work. And that's about it.
Yeah. You do get the sense that she's just here for so long because you get free dinners out of it.
Yeah, she's just like, I'll wait till they forget about me and then I'll escape when I feel like it. Fuck it.
Yeah.
And the first person to convince her to escape is
Jeanne
d'Arc, yes.
And they're building something in the prison, some magic thing.
Some giant, yeah. It looks like a giant sigil or something. Yeah, yeah
something
yeah.
like that, yeah, being made of ministerial.
Mm.
And the king reveals what an arsehole he is to Nina.
Oh, that was really fucking sad. Anything that breaks Nina's heart, man.
Fucking scumbag. It's just like, when this is over, you want to dance with me again? It's like, oh, you were a little, that's fucking low, man.
I wanted her to punch him right there, but I think that's going to be earned down the line, right?
Oh, yeah, and also the heavens declared war on humanity.
Yeah, and they fixed Muguro or L, whichever you want to call him, right up.
Yeah, there was some kind of throat injury there. You see, like some kind of scar across the neck.
Yeah, yeah.
And, yeah, so basically the king basically says, well, if you... Because the people are beginning to protest. There's people who still support the gods over the king. And, of course, the people who support Nina over everybody. I do like how they're like, and they are a genuine third faction in this storyline because they're not protesting.
They're just, poor Nina in just... prison. I hope she's all right. But she's like do most of the time. She's grand.
And it's Gabrielle shows up and basically says, "Give back what you've stolen. Start worshipping gods again. Otherwise, we're going to wipe mankind out."
Well, she doesn't actually threaten. She just says, give back what
pretty
you stole.
Much, yes.
And the king goes like, if you want to come fucking get it. And he's like, good idea. We fucking will. And I was like, oh, okay.
Now, see you at church.
Yeah.
But yeah,
your funeral.
Yeah, for all his talk, though, the fact that he's trying to get Jean to...
I think that would be like a definite win for him, as opposed to he seems pretty confident that he's going to win. But yeah, obviously, if you can get her to recant and
and also
pledge loyalty,
it's to be on his side to get her son back rather from the gods. But Nina tells her not to do it.
Hmm.
Yeah, I get in the sense as well that he feels like I might have bitten off more than I can chew. I didn't think to actually go along with my fucking goading of them there. So he's going to Jean and say, hey, it's pretty loyal to me, and, you know, and get your son on side here and try and avert this war.
I don't think it's just that, though. I think it's also his own people starting to protest against him. And so he's now had to turn his soldiers against his own people, not just demons.
Yeah, they're just basically shouting and throwing rocks and stuff outside
to the point. And then to the point at the end where he's now recruiting demons to his army as well, by the looks of things.
Yes.
Who is it? Is it Bauer or something like that? Buer?
So it's something like that. Yeah. The guy in the arena.
Yeah, I looked
like,
it up.
Oh, you've been promoted to captain now.
Yeah, that guy doesn't look anything like that in the card game, but. he looks like some sort of bizarre cat elemental in the card game, where it didn't look like that at all here.
Well, maybe he's under all the armor, he does look like that.
But maybe it's a very common demon name.
Yes.
It's like John for demons. Yeah, could be.
I think that was everything. It seemed like a lot of it was in the prison, but then there was a whole lot of stuff happening outside as well.
You also have the side escape plan. Like, Nina and Jean seem to be going on their way to escaping until the fucking king appears in the elevator. Yes. And that kind of shuts it down pretty quick just by breaking her poor little heart. but you have the zombie girl.
Rita
just,
coming in, yeah.
Yeah, Rita doing her own plan. And fucking, there's some really good bits with that.
I mean, there's been bad bits in some of the last few episodes in terms of animation, but this is great all the way through, I thought. And there's lots of the fact there's so much like really good small detail.
Right, right.
Like when it pulls out at the end and you see how far Nina's dragged that ball as she's being held back. There's like a furrow built into the bridge at this point.
The walkways weren't designed for holding a prisoner of her level of danger.
Yeah, that guy swings a club at her and she just grabs it and she's still holding
it. She grabs it without looking and he's just trying to struggle. Like, I can't move it.
While she carries on a conversation.
Well, her heart's getting broken. That's the main reason I think she gets rid of it. Dear.
Yeah. And the guy who thinks, Rita first breaks in, he's like, what are you doing here, little girl? I'm like, what? Why would you? Surely this is something suspicious.
Like, maybe he's thinking, right, I'm on the fucking walls, right? What are the odds a little girl is breaking into prison? It's probably some fucking important how-do-you-do fucking guy coming in and going like, oh, I'm big and important, so I brought my daughter on my tour of the prison. It's like, because there's no other logical reason for a little girl to be on the parapet of this prison.
Is that a disembodied hand? It is. Oh, it's freaking me out.
The other guards reacting to that freaking hand just crawling in. It's like one guy going like, what the fuck is that? And when they realize the hand, they're all just trying to step on it and shit. They're just panicking, as you would.
While it runs around drawing a magic circle.
Before on Rocky, he's giving all the SWAT hand signals.
Yes.
To two guys that way. 12 o'clock.
good stuff.
And so next week, it looks like the gang's all back together.
For escape.
The actual prison break.
Properly this time.
Now, the thing which I dawned on me a couple of weeks ago is there's that furry creature in the end credits who's not appeared.
Yeah, yeah.
Is Favreau going to get turned into that? Because I was like, is that Favreau? Yeah.
Oh, man. I hadn't considered it. That's pretty good.
The sound cut up meter, what do you just say?
I was saying in the end credits, they're going on that journey that with it's the duck and the hand, and then there's like a furry creature. And I was like, is that furry creature going to be Favreau at some point? Is Favreau going to get turned in? Because it's the same colour hair that Favreau has. Is he going to get turned into a small furry creature?
Does he die, and does his hair become sentient?
That could be the other thing, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Part of me thinking, probably no, I hope not. And even if it does, I hope it's temporary. So like having him around, don't want him to go so soon.
I know, sure. But getting turned into things was the entire crux of the
first
series.
I suppose. Well, lean on that again, though, do you? Come on.
I know, but it would be different if he's a small furry creature as opposed to suddenly growing a devil's tail.
Well, in this series, it seems to be the cuter you are, the more fucking badass you're capable of. I guess with the exception of the duck has done nothing pretty cool so far.
No.
Yes.
I say so far. It's probably going to happen eventually.
Yeah, there's lots of shots of Sophia looking like, oh, I'm not sure I'm going to go along with this.
Yeah, because you got the Queen of Heaven kind of going like, hey, we're totally going to save your mother. You're totally going to help us, right? And he's like, yes, I will totally help you, that vocal cords and shit. And it's like, don't know about this. Don't know about going to war with humanity. That seems pretty
it's kind of how it's phrased. We're going to correct humanity. And it's should we probably be persuading like a young child to use their fucking unlimited power to force humanity to do the right thing rather than try and just kind of guide them the right way?
Yeah.
That sounds like exactly what fucking our guys are going to do, forcing people to do things they don't want to do, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's also kind of like, oh, have you forgotten how the humans helped us save Bahamut in the same way the humans have forgotten how we helped them face Bahamut?
Yeah, you're just doing the exact same thing back at them, or wanting to at least, yeah.
Okay, on to even worse people. Dragon Ball Super. Which episode was this?
95.
That's 95. I'm waiting for the my things to come back.
The worst, the most evil, Frieza's Rampage.
Yes. In which Goku gets a reminder that for all his own borderline amoral desire for battle, Frieza is still the worst. Even worse than Goku is.
Yeah, yeah. Pretty, like, dude, why did you... Like, I could see it there. Frieza's just standing there and was like, what's this I have in my hand, Goku? Like, don't turn your back on that. Come on. dear.
Yeah, my thought was, is this the best episode yet?
Jokes, I think.
But it was good in so many other kind of ways, though. I may have been cripping there a little while back once, you know, wish that the guy turned a little bit sooner. I'll get to be kind of more of this kind of Frieza faffing about. The assassins will come and they'll take him out of it easy. But it pulls something a lot more interesting out of the hat with that initial setup.
Sure.
And it also had,
I'm glad it did,
amazing animation this episode.
Yeah, yeah. I was going off model a few bits, but I think that was for like the still parts. Anytime when it had to go full motion, it looked pretty great.
Yeah, particularly the disposing of the assassins that Frieza does, and then the one-punch cross-counter duel.
Mm. Yeah, what's this fun shit of when Frieza's got, like, he already had the fun finger laser beam, now it's got fucking Omega sanction, the fun things that follow you around.
He's been training in his brain, Niall.
You get Omega beams. Come on. Cheap.
Frieza's always been pretty cheap. I think he's always had the laser thing, though, right?
Yeah, but it couldn't follow you around like fucking Darkseid's thing. That's my fun pointer. But you are right. It is good. Like, you know, he's achieved a complete set of amounts of energy by focusing on killing Goku over and over again.
Yeah, it's different from when you purge all evil. It's just when I imagine the many ways in which I can kill you. Ooh, I want to kill you.
Very cammy. You can release your mind, free your mind of all earthly desires except one, murdering your most hated enemy over and over and over again.
No wonder he never fucking passed on. Jesus.
And he traps him in a ball of... traps Goku in a ball of destruction god juice or whatever it's supposed to be.
Yeah. Well, one of the assassins and all, he said, look, you shit, but take this with you. Sidra gave him like a little bit of god of destruction energy, and whatever hits it, it'll get immediately erased, no chance of coming back. We won't go to hell, heaven, anything.
Like the thing of him holding it behind his back, the ball of energy that he brought with him. It's kind of funny how it's playing with those freaking Dragon Ball powers. And Frieza's like, I totally know you have it. Go on, take a shot. He throws it, and it's like, aha, you missed, motherfucker. It's like, this is the real one. And Frieza's like, oh, fuck, I got that one too. Sucker, it was the third one.
Under the water.
Yeah.
And then Frieza breaks out of it, shrinks it down to a ball, and then fires it at Goku. And goes, come on, Goku, can't you get out of that? Hey,
I just did.
Yeah. And while Goku's trapped in ball of destruction energy, like Frieza's trying to interrogate, but keeps getting distracted by how much fun it is to murder people. The assassin's going like, okay, tell me who you're working for, because I've got a very fun idea.
I guess one of the god phones is like, yo, is that Universe 9 there? How'd you get this number? Oh, I took it off one of your dead assassins. So I got a proposition for you. How about instead of you sending guys to try and take me out, how about instead I join your team? Because, you know, I killed all your guys, and if I have one universe like 7th best guy here, and if he succumbs this destruction energy in the next 5 minutes as he might, and that's one of their best guys gone, so they're kind of guaranteed to lose, but I'm stronger than him. You have me and your son guaranteed to win.
I don't want this universe to be erased because this is where I'm standing, so meh, meh, meh. And the guy's going through the rule book, it's like there's nothing in it against the rule book.
Yes. A dog can't play basketball.
Ah. dear. And he nearly gets away with it,
but then Whis and Beerus teleport in. Then what's all this then? Why are guys running so late?
Yeah, and while he gets kind of a bollocking from Beerus, it was like, you weren't fucking trying to change sides, right? And it's like, no, totally, I'm on this fucking side. Like, Frieza is just like, now I can get in with the gods and fucking get some real fucking shit going.
It's pretty impressive how with the kind of limited bit of insight that Frieza gets into this via Goku, you know, asking to join a tournament now. He's already concocted a fucking scheme to try and further himself. It's pretty... That's a massive criminal right there.
Yeah, we were going to say Frieza's deal, he was going to do a universe nine, was all you've got to do is bring me back from the dead.
Yeah. And he worked for him, obviously.
Which is the key thing that he's angling to get out of all of this.
I guess he couldn't... there'd be no reason for him to otherwise, because he's going back to hell of Universe 7.
Yes. He's not, because Goku promised that he's going to bring him back to life if they win.
If he wins...
Yes. So that will make him want to win.
Yeah.
Hey, Goku apologizes because he forgot that Frieza was the worst kind of scum.
Sorry, Beerus. He fucking turned my back at him. Stupid, I know.
It's my fault.
Doi.
So then they have a duel at full power reach because obviously he blindsided Goku when he was in normal mode.
And he hit him with God of Destruction energy, yeah.
Yes, but presumably he would have stood a better chance if he hit him while he was in Super Saiyan Blue.
Well, yeah. In fairness to Goku, he still held off all of that,
yes.
Which, you know, is over God of Destruction that can just like erase anything. It did that, like, all that in first gear.
Yes. So.
Yeah.
And also, Frieza doesn't have a new normal human, normal whatever his physiology is at the moment, because he's back in weird undead form.
Yeah, I think it mentioned there when they had Vegeta back for a little while when they were fighting Majin Buu. It's like, when you come back, you know, as Ghost, Angel, whatever it is, you're actually a little bit tougher than you would be normally if you were alive.
Because his gold form drains his stamina, but he doesn't have stamina because he doesn't have a stomach that needs food and eating and shit like that. Because he's a ghost, technically, right now. Yeah. Mm. A ghost with muscles, but yeah, still a ghost.
And they knock each other out just before the tournament's about to begin.
Aren't they out of senzu beans? God damn it.
This is really good. And next week, they finally go to the tournament. They presumably doesn't actually start until the episode after.
No, they go. Everybody arrives, you can get like an eyeball on all the weirdos to turn up.
We got to see if the fucking dog universe gets erased because they couldn't get a full fucking team. Oh, dear.
Looking forward to it starting properly.
Mm.
And maybe it'll only go a season itself. Maybe it'll go as long as it took for them to prepare for it.
God, what if it goes in real time, though? All that build-up. For like two episodes.
Or what if it doesn't? What if it never takes place properly because Frieza and other people are plotting during it?
I don't know. Zeno seemed pretty happy with the stage.
That's true, but I'm thinking if Frieza teams up with Frost, there'll be all sorts of shenanigans going on.
I think Frieza's going to be disgusted by Frost.
That is a potential other thing which could happen. Yes. Yeah, that is the other potential thing. Or he'll see him as weak, so therefore he can manipulate him.
Oh, the thing that makes me think, not that they're starting the tournament next week, the thing that makes me think Frieza's like in it now is the fact that Frieza was in the end credits. And I was like, oh, okay, right. They've poorly edited him in to the to the shots.
Maybe Kane and Cauliflower will hear about how Frieza killed off all the Saiyans in Universe 7. And he's like, what, that dick? I'll show him with Frost. And they beat the fuck him up then.
Who, him or Frost?
No, the Frieza, rather.
Yeah.
Righty-ho, that ends this week's episode of Let's Go, the weekly anime podcast about weekly anime. But before we say goodbye, let's find out what's coming up on this week's Secret of the Sailor Madness and Dynamite in the Brain.
Well, if you go to the SuperCinemas.com right now, we have show number 149, all about Iria, Zeram, the animation. It's an OAV about a kind of tokusatsu alien bounty hunter film from 90s, and now I made an OAV of it, which is pretty impressive and quite popular. Mm. And that's all gearing up then for the prestigious episode 150, all about Justice League up until it became Unlimited, the
DC animated TV series, but hopefully if he's available and everything falls into place, special guest Martin Schneider on that one.
Righty-ho, and on Dynamite in the Brain, currently we have up episode 4 of the famous anime podcast with Niall and Wayne and Elliot.
I love those guys.
Which we look at the Shonen Jump anime that took us into the new millennium and decide which were famous and which have been forgotten. And then following that, next week we will have an episode all about Gantz-O. So look forward to that. We'll be back next week with more Let's Go. Goodbye.
Bye. Ciao.